I will just get up and check what's going on. So I got up, you know, after a couple of minutes or so, and I had these sliding doors in the basement, and I just slid the doors apart, and right there in front of me was this guy, who I didn't know at all, with bloodshot eyes, and absolutely pumped, and he had just walked out of one of the other guy's bedroom, the other guy who shared the basement with me, and he was right there in front of my face, and he just turned to me and just said, "I've got a knife, give me all your money, give me your credit cards and tell me your PIN numbers." And he just emerged from my friend's room. There was absolutely no sign of my friend. And at that point, I was pretty scared, and I thought, you know, my judgment of the situation was, let's give him everything you've got, and, you know, let this situation move on. So I gave him my wallet, which was just cut, and then, you know, I thought he'd run out, but he ran up the stairs into the house, and the next thing I heard was an absolutely terrifying, guttural scream from one of the girls in the house. And then, literally, a few seconds later, I saw him falling down the stairs with one of the guy who was on the next floor up, who had just jumped on him as soon as he came into his room, fallen down to the bottom of the stairs. And as I saw him at the bottom of the stairs, I was thinking, is there any sign at this point of that knife? And then I assessed the situation for a little bit longer and thought, James, let's call my friend James at this point, seems to be handling the situation quite well. I think he might be getting the upper hand here. So I think, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to join in. And, you know, odds are ever in our favour at this point. So I jumped on him. I put my hand around his neck like this, and held him on the floor. And at that point, he bit my arm. And he pulled the skin of my arm out to here. The amazing elastic properties of skin. But at that point then he could see I got him like that. My friend had his ankles. And I think at that point he said, "Okay, I think we can just leave this here. Why don't you just let me go? I'll give you your wallet back." And at that point, in my mind, at that point, I could hear, not audibly hear, I could hear God saying to me, "Tell him about me. Tell him about me." Now, in this story, you kind of want it to turn out that I, like, adopt this guy and he becomes my son and we've been forever reconciled. And it really isn't that sort of story. I didn't say anything at all to him. But my other friend, the third guy, did it then, you know, even slower than me, emerged from his room. He got the worst injury of all of us, climbing over us and tripping over a bicycle. Completely sliced open his leg. And then we called the police, and the police came. And this is the bit of today's story. I really want you to grasp that. And it is quite shocking. The police came very, very quickly, and they said that they got there, and they said to us, "Do you want us to leave you for a bit with him and just, you know, administer some justice?" Now, this is 25 years ago, there are two views of, really, of how you deal with situations like that. You know, now you might say I'm sure there are kind of bits in between as well. But I felt God saying to me, "Tell him about me. I love him." I felt no particular anger. And then I feel like there's a world's view of, let's get vengeance and retribution, and let's show anger and give somebody a good kicking. And right there in my face, and that is the history of the world. The history of the world is, tell him about me, tell people about Jesus, or bring vengeance and anger and distribution. And it is the history of the world through thousands of years. And it's the history that we can see going back to that story of Joseph. Okay, that in the story of Joseph, if you're not familiar with that story, he's second to youngest of Jacob's 12 children. He's the favourite, and when he's very young, it is an amazing story, when he's very young, he used to hear God through dreams. And he has a dream that all his brothers are going to bow down before him. And as perhaps not the, you know, as being a bit full of himself, but also very aware what God's doing, he's kind of really enthusiastic and he tells his brothers, hey, you're all going to bow down before me. Not the smartest thing to do, perhaps. They don't really like him. And as a consequence, then the next time he's out with them all, they say, hey, here comes Joseph. And they know he's their father's favourite as well. And you know I have a point of view about favourite children. I do have a favourite child myself. I've got four kids. You know, that's just a joke that I've long-running joke that I keep going. Obviously, I don't think there are favourite children. But Jacob did have a favourite child. And and at that point, the others think, well, here comes the favourite. And they think about killing him, but they don't kill him. They fake his death, and they send him off into slavery. He ends up serving in Potiphar's house, in this kind of senior official in Pharaoh's household. Potiphar's wife endlessly tries to seduce him. He avoids that because he knows that's not right. But Potiphar would rather people believed that Joseph tried to rape his wife than the truth he knows, which is that his wife tried to seduce Joseph. So he has him put in jail. Whilst he's in jail, he hears God through dreams more and more. He is in jail, you know, or certainly the period of time when he is unfairly in jail until when he appears before Pharaoh is about 13 years. So there's 17 to age 30, the most important, you know, not most, but prime years of your life, he spends in jail or a slave. Okay, so he's in jail. These two other officials here in jail, they start having dreams and say, can anybody interpret my dreams? Joseph interprets for them and says, hey, if my interpretation turns out to be right, will you help me be released? They get released, one of them dies, one of them gets released, and they don't bother remembering Joseph at all. He's still left in jail. And then eventually these two, Pharaoh starts having dreams, and then Pharaoh says, can anybody interpret these dreams? Pharaoh's officials remember, do you remember there was that guy in jail who could interpret dreams? And so they then... and say, let's get that guy Joseph out because he'll interpret Pharaoh's dreams. So 13 years after his brothers sold him into slavery, Joseph is back, washed and scrubbed up, standing before Pharaoh, and then he interprets that dream, and it is that there's going to be 7 years of great fruitful harvests, and then there's going to be 7 years of famine. And we join the story sometime into famine. So that is over 20 years, 13 years he's been, you know, in prison and stuff, and then 7 years of harvest, and then a couple of years into the famine, Joseph is distributing wheat and stuff, and there are all his brothers before him again. And it's exactly the same situation as we just saw, as I just told you about of my own story. I feel that there's Joseph and there's his brothers who wrongfully sold him into slavery, resulted in him being in prison and having, you know, a pretty horrible existence from 17 to 30. And then he, you know, 9 years after that, he's got them all before him. The vision God gave him of them all bowing down is fulfilled before him. And what does he do? So look at the passage. What does he do? It is the most amazing reaction to somebody doing you wrong, to somebody sinning against you. His reaction is he weeps and he draws them close. And that is God's reaction and a godly reaction to when somebody hurts you. I mean, in this case, it is supreme hurt. But have a look in verse 2. It says, he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him and Pharaoh's household heard about it. At the very end, verses 14 and 15, then he threw his arms around his brother Benjamin and wept, and Benjamin embraced him weeping. And he kissed all his brothers and wept over them. Afterwards, his brothers talked with him. So after all that pain, that is a godly reaction to sin, to when somebody is, you weep. He asked everybody else to leave the room apart from his brothers, and then he drew them close. Okay, so he cried. I don't know, when was the last time you cried? I look at it. When was the last time you cried? And was it about sin? You know, was it about somebody hurting you? That kind of amazing, I don't cry very often, but I am aware a couple of times recently I've cried with each of my sons who are, I've got 14-year-old twin boys, and it has been about some injustice where I've reached the end of my tether, and it has had an amazing effect on both of my boys. I thank God for that time. It feels stupid, it was snotty, they were a little bit distressed, dad's crying, bit awkward, but it had a powerful effect upon them. So that's, you know, how we react to sin. When somebody hurts us, that is, if you know Jesus, that reaction will come up in you, is a crying over the wrongdoing, a crying over it, and a desire for intimacy, to draw close to them. But, you know, I've got to say, how does Joseph manage to do that? So if the response to sin and wrongdoing when somebody hurts you is that level of forgiveness, of weeping and drawing close, where do you get the power from to do that? Or how do you rationalize that? And I know this is what people look at Christians and say, are they just weak? They're big on this forgiveness thing. Why? Does it make sense? Is it rational? How does Joseph do that in this passage? He could focus on, what a waste of the prime years of my life. He was clearly an uber-able person. Does he think, just what a waste of my life? The way he did it, the way he rationalized it, was he saw God's purpose and God's story. And that's what we have to learn to do in every situation, is see what's God's story, what is God doing in this situation. So if you look at verses 5 and 7 of the passage, you know, Joseph says, don't be distressed, don't be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives. Because it was to save lives. That's why it happened. He saw what God was doing. And God was, that's, you know, so although Joseph's brothers intended to ruin Joseph's dream and make it not happen, God's purpose through selling him into slavery was to bring Joseph's dream to fulfillment and to save lives. Reading on in verse 7, but God sent me ahead of you to preserve you for a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So whatever you're going through at the moment, whatever injustice may have been done to you, or frankly, you may have done to others, you've got to ask, how does this fit into God's story of saving lives? Because that is always God's story. So what is God doing that is allowing whatever situation you're in at the moment, what is God doing to allow, because he will be at work, and his story is, he is saving lives. So find out how he is saving lives, whatever situation you're facing. So it's a great question to ask, what's God doing here? What's God doing in this current situation? Now, that's all history with Joseph, okay? One of the things God's really opening up to me about in the Bible at the moment is just how these stories don't change. Joseph was a type of Christ. The whole Bible just tells stories of people who are doing things like Christ did, all building up towards the ultimate story of what Christ did. So if you think about it, Joseph came and he suffered unfairly. He was persecuted, but he went through all of that and ended up in a position of power in order to save lives. And he must have saved thousands of lives in Egypt, because otherwise they would have starved. And Joseph intervened in that way. And we can look at people like David, you can look at people like Samson, lots of other people in the Old Testament who are types of Christ. Basically, they're doing exactly what ultimately, though, Jesus would do, and only Jesus would do. So Joseph points us to Jesus. Jesus came to save lives. He was unfairly punished and crucified and rose again to save lives and to bring abundant forgiveness. So Joseph offered that amazing forgiveness to his brothers. He brought them close. He wept over their sin. Jesus today says to all of you, whatever you've done, he weeps over your sin. He weeps over how you've been hurt. He weeps over how some things in your life have played out the way they have to make life difficult for you. And he says, come close. He asks everybody else to leave the room. And he says, come close to me because I want to weep with you. And ultimately, he says, I died and I want to restore my relationship with you. Just as Joseph brought his brothers near, he was a type of Christ. And Jesus says to you now, I want to bring forgiveness to you. I want to weep with you. I want to help you forgive and to help you be forgiven. So as the band come back up, if I could ask them to come back up, we're going to start worshipping again. But I want to give you all that chance to, there are a couple of things really that God particularly lay on my heart. So there'll be a ministry team here. We'd love to pray with you to either help you forgive like Joseph forgave when people have done you wrong. To be able to forgive others. But we'd also love it if you don't know the forgiveness that Jesus brings. We'd love you to be able to forgive and to be forgiven yourself. So we'd love to help you give forgiveness and we'd love to help you receive forgiveness. So come, the ministry team will be here at the left. We'd love to pray with you for that forgiveness.